They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in! It's a rocket of a shot!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Now he gets some help from Armia. Darts away there from Hall. And Armia will get out towards center ice and chip and chase around. A couple of checks. Now he's turned it into a two-on-one. He moves in, shoots, and scores! Third shorthanded goal of the year for Joel Armia. And we are tied at three.
The game may have been meaningless, but the individual effort and the individual performance by Joel Armia on that shorthanded goal that tied the game was certainly impressive. The Jets went on to defeat the New Jersey Devils last night by a 4-3 score. Patrick Laine with the nasty shootout goal, the only shootout goal. Connor Hellebuck pitching a shutout in the shootout, giving the Jets a 4-3 victory over the New Jersey Devils in what was the makeup game from when it was snowed out, as much as an NHL game can be snowed out a couple weeks back. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg, all in studio with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, not much to take out of last night's game. It was a nice goal by Joel Armia. It was a nice shootout goal by Patrick Laine. I mean, when the Jets were down 3-1, I thought this game was over. They surprised me by battling back, but I mean, ultimately, you know, I guess it's nice. You'd rather they win than lose, I suppose, but ultimately it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, Drew, as you mentioned, heading into last night's game, we knew that there were no playoff implications with these two teams, right? Mm-hmm. The Devils are a bottom feeder in the Eastern Conference, and the Jets were mathematically eliminated on Monday. So in that sense, we knew that these two teams weren't playing for much, but I actually thought it was a pretty entertaining game. And when you consider that the Jets were down two goals and then Blake Wheeler ties it up on that shot by Julian Melchiori, especially the overtime guys. Like, I tweeted this out last night, watching that 3-on-3 overtime, and, you know, Patrick Laine had a chance there, Mark Scheifele hit the post. Like, make 3-on-3 overtime 10 minutes, because that shootout, even though Patrick Laine, you know, we saw that move earlier in the season and he scores, and I agree with you, Drew, it was a nice move, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, flip a coin for the shootout, right, Joel?
Yeah, sure.
So I actually thought it was a pretty entertaining finish to that game. You had Blake Wheeler tripping Taylor Hall there on the breakaway.
I'm not sure how that wasn't a penalty shot.
Well, I also don't know how Taylor Hall wasn't injured there.
Yeah, he crashed pretty hard into the boards.
He went very hard into the boards, and he scored a nice goal there in the second period, so I actually thought it was a pretty entertaining game, and so, you know, in that sense, you know, the Jets pick up the 2 points. Doesn't mean much in the standings, but, you know, at least they're fighting at this point in the season.
You mentioned overtime going to 10 minutes. I mean, if you did that, you'd probably have to get rid of the shootout anyways, which would be a pretty good solution to this whole overtime formula, would it not? I mean, if you think about it, right, get rid of the shootout, make overtime 3-on-3, 10 minutes, he'll probably get a winner no matter what every single time. But, yeah.
And, you know, sorry for interrupting. Yeah. And if after 10 minutes of 3-on-3, if it ends in a tie, I'm okay with that.
You know what? I'm
ties don't bother me as much as they.
I don't mind the 2-0 formula. You know, 2 points, 0 for a loss.
Sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me
like
at all.
Like what Sweet Lou was whispering there a couple of weeks ago there when at the GM meetings after some guys were mentioning the 3-2-1. Anyways, you know, the game itself, what did Blake Wheeler call it? A snoozer?
Well, we have.
And that's basically what it was,
we
right?
We have Blake Wheeler. This is his post-game comments from last night, just because it's an interesting to hear a professional hockey player actually admit to this.
Yeah, it was a snoozer. You could tell it was the rescheduled game there in the first period. It was kind of quiet out there, but we gutted it out.
What did you see from your shorthanded play tonight and obviously the big goal that Joel was able to score for you there in the third period?
Keep them off the board's huge, and, you know, it's always a bonus when a guy makes a great play like that. You know, hats off to him for, you know, making a huge play for us.
You know, Drew, why I thought that was so kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, interesting or puzzling.
Sure.
Is that I actually thought, again, I thought the finish to that game was actually quite entertaining, and especially Joel Armia's goal. And Blake Wheeler kind of says, oh, yeah, you know, it's just nice that we were able to keep them off the board. I would argue that Armia's goal was maybe the nicest goal of the year. He goes by Damon Severson in the neutral zone, and then he gives a little how's she going to Kyle Palmieri in the devil's zone, and then just wrists a beautiful shot that beats Corey Schneider, a very good goalie. He might be having a down year this year, but that individual effort by Joel Armia, third shorthanded goal of the season, which leads the Jets, and Blake Wheeler kind of, you know, just dismissed it as if it was kind of just some regular goal.
Yeah, but put yourself in his shoes or skates, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're not going to the playoffs for how many years now? I mean, 5 out of 6, he's the captain of this team. I mean, he's been in the play. How many times has he been in the playoffs? Was he there with Boston? I mean, he got traded the year they won the cup, right, back in 11?
Yeah, he got traded to Atlanta.
So he's got, what, maybe 2 postseason stints in his relatively
think
young
about
career?
If he was overwhelmingly exuberant after last night's game, we'd probably be talking about why are you so excited? Why are you so happy? It was a meaningless game.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, look, not taking nothing away from Joel Armia's performance.
And he's stoic at the best of times, Wheeler. Right?
Wheeler, yeah. Stoic would be a good word for it. You know, Joel Armia's goal was a tremendous individual effort. And it goes to show you, you know, the concept of tanking. Players don't tank because they only know to go out on the ice and try and give what they can as best they can. He can't, you know, he's not going to deke around 2 guys and say, okay, that's enough, and then just, you know, try and dump the puck in and skate away. They're wired a certain way. But, you know, at the same point in time, it's a nice goal. It's a nice effort. It'll look good on the Joel Armia highlight reel, individual highlight reel at the end of the season, but it doesn't mean anything.
No.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Drew, in the sense that you don't want Blake Wheeler after the game to be, as you said, exceedingly exuberant. But I just thought it was a little bit funny that he said it was a snoozer. You don't see hockey players say that very often.
That's very true.
In post-game comments, right?
But he wasn't. That doesn't mean he was dismissing Joel Armia's effort.
No,
it's
no,
just
you're
right. Overall game. I mean, a meaningless in-and-outer in New Jersey between two teams who are closer to tee times in the playoff line. I mean, that's what it was. It was a snoozer. I mean, even as a spectator watching the game, it had some entertaining moments. But knowing the background story of it, who cares, right?
At the end of 20 minutes, I tweeted that would anybody object to this game just being played with running time for the remainder
of
the game?
No, put sticks in the middle, switch jerseys, have an inner squad, right?
Right. Of course, I was being a little tongue-in-cheek and a little facetious, but it's true. It's a meaningless game between two teams not going anywhere. I mean, the 3-on-3 overtime was entertaining in that 3-on-3 is always going to be entertaining for the most part.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah, I mean, if you have that much room on the ice and you can go back and forth, it doesn't matter if it's an exhibition game or it doesn't matter if it's, you know, game, whatever that was, 78, 77, whatever it was on the schedule.
A remake of 71.
Yeah, whatever it might have actually been. You know, there's going to be entertaining moments, and the Joel Armia goal is, you know, an entertaining moment, and the 3-on-3 overtime was an entertaining moment, and Patrick Laine's goal is an entertaining moment just because he's so damn talented, and you don't get to see that kind of play all the time.
And Drew, for a player like Joel Armia, I think you could argue that these games have more meaning than some other players, and that's because Joel Armia, if they decide to go with option 2 and only protect 4 forwards, Joel Armia could be a guy that's exposed, right? So I like Joel Armia's game. I think this year he's proven that he can be an everyday NHLer, and I'm not saying, you know, that you know, Joel Armia is going to score 30 goals and 60 points, but I think he has more of an upside than maybe we thought when he first came over from Buffalo, and especially in a penalty-killing role, and Jets head coach Paul Maurice talked about that after the game. I think he's really emerged as not only a good defensive forward, but a guy who can score shorthanded.
As you say that, you know, he's got something to play for. If you're a GM or you're scouting other teams, do these 5 games, can that change your mind?
No, shouldn't.
You know,
you have a 75-game sample, and you have a 5-game sample, from my perspective. I mean, Joel Armia is what I would describe as a relatively inconsistent player, and that was the knock on him when he came over from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Some nights he's very noticeable, and he's great defensively, and he's able to, you know, intercept the puck, or he's able to create turnovers. And some nights he's not as noticeable.
And you forget, Drew, he's only 22 years old, right?
Sure.
Or 23 years old. I forget exactly how old he is, but he's still in the early years of his career, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And in that sense, I think he's trying to show the coaches and the management that he wants to be here. That's more so what I meant. I realize yep. the last five games are not going to make or break the Jets' decision, because I truly believe the Jets have already decided who they're going to protect. I don't think much has really changed in the last, you know, 2 weeks, 4 weeks. So,
yeah. And
it's nice to see him, you know, get that goal. And, you know, he's had a nice season. I realize that, again, you know, he's had, you know, ups and downs. He's only got 9 goals. But, again, this isn't a guy that we necessarily pegged for 20 goals this year, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned him being young in his career, and he's in that awkward phase where he, you know, some nights he might be showing us that top six kind of flash. Then most nights he needs to be a bottom six type of grinder, penalty kill specialist. So he's still trying to figure out where he fits in, right?
I think the idea of him as a top six guy is now gone.
I agree with that.
I don't think any. I'd be surprised.
But he can play up and down with that skill set.
But again,
set,
Drew,
right,
you throw out these top six, bottom six. Not you specifically. I mean everybody in hockey. And I think, you know, with a guy like Joel Armia, he's obviously not going to show the offensive upside to be a top six guy, but I think if he plays on one of the top two lines, he's not going to be out of place in that sense. He's a very smart hockey player.
He can probably play up and down the lineup, but he's probably better suited for for an everyday bottom six
third
role.
Or fourth line.
Yeah.
And that's what he needs to really, you know, get on and just figure out how can I become a bottom, I guess, winger, you know, third, fourth line penalty kill specialist and develop that role so that he takes it, grabs it, and never relinquishes it.
Shifting the focus from last night's game, I want to move it to Tucker Poolman, obviously North Dakota Fighting Hawks defenseman, Jets property.
Tucker watch.
His season came to an end. He was injured when the Fighting Hawks lost, and are now their hockey season is over. Here's Bob McKenzie from last night's Insider Trading on Tucker Poolman.
You have to feel for a guy who's about to realize his dream and sign an NHL contract, and then he gets hurt. Although in some situations, it does open possibilities, Bob.
That's right. We're talking about Tucker Poolman, Winnipeg Jet, 2013 fifth-round pick. 6'3", 210 pounds, appears to be NHL-ready. Tucker Poolman suffered a shoulder injury during the NCAA playoffs and is going to require surgery that will likely keep him out for 4 to 6 months. Now, should say up front, Tucker Poolman would like to be a Winnipeg Jet. He's from Grand Forks, North Dakota, so there's a natural affinity to be a Winnipeg Jet. That said, if he hadn't been injured, he likely would have been in their lineup by now, burning the first year of his entry-level contract. It's unique because Tucker Poolman is an unrestricted free agent come this August 15th if he doesn't sign with the Winnipeg Jets and could even go back to school for a year and then become an unrestricted free agent who doesn't even have to sign an entry-level contract, a la Matt Reed, just go right to an NHL deal with a lot less restrictions on it. So he's got a lot of different irons in the fire as far as his options.
And you hear Bob, you lay out the different options for Tucker Poolman, unrestricted free agent on August 15th if he doesn't sign with the Jets, where he would still be mandated to sign an entry-level contract. If he goes back to school next year, entry-level unrestricted free agent, can sign any kind of contract, not restricted to an ELC, or he can sign with the Jets tomorrow. With the Jets today. I mean, if you're Tucker Poolman and you're facing a surgery, and Bob says 4 to 6 months of a recovery, I'm sort of taking the bird that's in my hand as opposed to playing it with the unknowns. I think right now you have to grab the guarantee. Sure, you don't get to burn that year of an ELC, but you at least are guaranteed the money for the next 3 years.
And he's not supposed to have an agent, right? So how is he supposed to know
He's got an advisor.
Yeah. So how does he know what kind of market is out there? I mean, of course, he probably does know, but that is a big gamble, you know, squandering the opportunity to sign with that team that's a couple of hours north of you, you know, and to go for the chance of signing with anybody else. At this point, we can only go with what Gary was reporting, and that's according to his advisors and his camp, the intent is still for him to sign with the Jets.
If the intent,
but I mean, if this recovery takes 4 to 6 months, I mean, that can give a guy a lot of, you know, some time to think about it. I guess I don't know.
I would think that that Tucker Poolman's camp knows how long he's going to be injured for at this point in time. So if you know that it is 4 to 6 months, as Bob McKenzie was reporting there, and I have no reason to doubt Bob McKenzie because he's usually pretty damn accurate, I'd be hard-pressed to be turning up that, as I said, the bird in the hand right now to chase however many birds might be in the bush that you might be able to only grab with one arm because you're injured.
Andrew, you mentioned that if Tucker Poolman doesn't sign with the Jets, you know, he has the opportunity to become a free agent. But right now, there's nothing indicating that Tucker Poolman won't sign with the Jets, right? So I think there are a lot of Jets fans out there who are pretty nervous. You know, they've seen Tucker Poolman, you know, play 3 years with the University of North Dakota. He had a career year this year. And for a system that really isn't stockpiled with D prospects, Tucker Poolman is a top D prospect for the Jets. But as it stands right now, the only reason I think he hasn't signed yet is because of this injury. I think
I don't understand that logic, though.
Well, I think right now there might be, I don't know, I'm speculating right now, maybe there's some debate on whether or not he's going to play one more year at UND. Now, I would imagine.
Would that be to finish UND, or would that be to just go to free agency?
I mean, if he's playing one more year at UND, he's not doing it as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. That means he's going to reach free agency. That means he's going to be a free agent as of August 15th.
I've said all along I think he's going to sign with the Jets.
Well, he's got...
Because there's just nothing to indicate that... The only thing that would possibly maybe indicate that he wasn't going to sign with the Jets is he hasn't done it already.
Well, that would be a pretty damn good indicator to me. I mean,
but his college career just ended. So I mean,
no,
what
his college career didn't end though. His college season ended, and
that's what I meant.
I know that's what you meant. And he's not able to play right now. So absolutely, if he was able to play, he would burn that entry level year like we saw Brock Besser do in Vancouver earlier this past
weekend. That's what I'm
saying,
right? But he's injured right now, so he can't play.
Right. So wouldn't you want then just sign anyways and not have to worry about it? I mean, who knows that if you are out for 6 months, well, 6 months from now takes you until what? You know, next October? Who knows who's going to be interested in signing you next October? Who knows what happens if your recovery doesn't go very well? What happens if it's a more significant surgery?
Have you guys seen him play this year?
No.
Saw him play last year.
Right, I saw that too in the final. Is he? I mean, they say
I saw him play live last year.
Okay, yep. Is he NHL ready as we speak? I mean, they say he is, but I mean, look at this Jets roster. I mean, right shot heavy. Unless that can certainly change in the next couple of months going into this expansion draft and into the summer. But is he ready to crack this lineup as a regular? Well, or is that maybe why he's harboring doubts about this signing? Maybe he's wondering, maybe I won't get the opportunity. Who knows, right?
Right, and you know, you heard Bob McKenzie mention it. He's 6'3", 210 pounds, and he's played 3 years, won a national championship with UND last year. Obviously, the Jets management and coaching staff would know how ready he is for the NHL, but I don't think anybody would say right now he's going to step right into a third-pairing D role. I imagine the plan would be that he spends a year with the Manitoba Moose, and you know that's just me based on logic, really.
I agree with
you. There aren't many players that, unless you're a top pick, I mean, even Josh Morrissey, who was a first-round pick, didn't step right into the NHL, right? So imagine Tucker Poolman, the plan is for him to start his career off with the Manitoba Moose. But, hey, we're going to wait and see. I mean, I guess there is that outside chance or a chance that Tucker Poolman doesn't sign with the Jets. But right now, just saying, based on facts, we have nothing to indicate that he won't sign with the Jets except for the fact that he hasn't signed yet.
Yeah, and that's a big if because color, maybe I'm a little bit of a cynic, but every day that somebody goes by and they don't sign, boy, picking your destination on August 15th seems more and more appealing than it does the closer you get to August 15th.
It's possible. The only person that really knows right now is Tucker Poolman and his camp, right?
Joke's on him if he goes to August 15th and what? One more bidder?
Well, that's just it. If August 15th comes out and you're in the midst of significant shoulder surgery or shoulder rehab, maybe you don't have anybody interested in you at that point in time. So it is a bit of a difficult decision, I suppose, for Tucker Poolman and his camp. One last quick note on North Dakota, the Fighting Hawks. Disgraceful to eliminate the women's hockey program earlier today. I don't care how you have to do it. You find the money to keep the women's hockey program because the imbalance that exists between the men's hockey program at UND, which is obviously
basically a mini NHL team,
you find the money, you find a way to keep the women's hockey program going at UND at the same time.
You're here.
When we come back, we look at the Calder Trophy race between Line A Matthews and the assorted other cast of characters. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hyman behind the net. Nylander in support. Hyman plays it in front. Scores! And there it is! A record for Austin Matthews! Number 35!
Line A, 2-for-3. Line A in on Corey Schneider. To the forehand. Scores!
We've seen that one before. And Patrick Laine gives the Jets the lead in the shootout.
Austin Matthews, with his 35th goal on the season, propels himself into the lead in rookie goal scoring and rookie point totals. He's got 62 points now in 75 games. Patrick Laine of the Winnipeg Jets, 61 points in 69 games. He, of course, missed games earlier this season due to the concussion. He missed the game against Vancouver due to an illness. He also had an impact in the Jets' victory last night over the Devils, scoring the shootout winner. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Who's your leader? You got about five games to go. Who's your leader on the Calder Trophy race? Is Patrick Laine? Looks like the Leafs are in a good position to make the playoffs. The Jets, clearly not going to make the playoffs. Are you leaning one way or the other on your imaginary ballot as it comes to the Calder Trophy?
Yeah, I'm with Matthews. Yes?
I don't think it's as wide. I should say, I think it's more wide open than many think it
well,
is.
Well, you might get the vote split, right? In Toronto.
Right.
So that could bust it wide open for another guy like Laine or Zach Werenski.
Well, that's you know? The guy for me, Joel, that is maybe not getting talked about enough. He's definitely being talked about in Columbus, but you know, I don't think Austin Matthews has as big of a lead as some people think. And you look at the points per game, and Patrick Laine's points per game is actually better.
0.90 versus Matthews,
right.
0.83.
And same for goals per game. And there has been a lot of talk about, well, Austin Matthews is playing on a line with rookies, and you know, Patrick Laine has been playing with either Brian Little or Mark Scheifele. But really, I think you have to look at their accomplishments in a vacuum, in a
sure.
sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And these are both great players, and whoever ends up winning the Calder Trophy, I mean, is going to deserve it. But I think there's something to be said. Again, maybe that's because I played defense and follow defensemen a little bit closer, but I think there's something to be said for a rookie defenseman playing on a team that didn't make the playoffs last year, 47 points in 75 games. And he's been very good on the defensive side of the puck, not just offensively.
Yeah.
And he's a big reason why this Columbus Blue Jackets team is in the playoffs right now, is
yep.
going to the playoffs. They could end up winning the President's Trophy. Probably not, but they're definitely going to finish second or third in the Metro Division. So I think Zach Werenski has to be a bona fide contender for the Calder Trophy, not just you know a finalist.
Especially considering it's a position, like you say, that it takes so many years for a player to develop. Look at Josh Morrissey, right? I mean, he toiled in the minors and back to junior, the Ice Caps for that run a few years ago. I mean, based on that mindset, and I know this guy's not going to get any consideration when it comes to the final ballot, but you know, what's been the biggest problem with our net mining here in Winnipeg is what do we call Connor Hellebuyck? Young, right?
Sure. You're going to talk about Matt Murray now, aren't you?
He's 22, right? And mm-hmm. what's more impressive, to be putting up 30-plus at 18 or to be being a number one net miner with almost 30 wins, probably will get 30 wins by the end of the season at 22, considering every other net miner in the top 10, they're all 28, 27, 29, 30, 31. I mean, it's really on the grid of excellence. Are they not almost in a tie, based on the gap? Matt Murray's not going to get any love, but
yeah, he's not going to get any love because people will say he doesn't play enough games because he's played 45 games this year. Started only 43 for the Penguins, as if that's. I mean, but truthfully, I don't know any. It almost says that goaltenders will never win the Calder Trophy
yeah.
then, because never, with the exception of the Jets here for some reason, do you really expect a rookie goalie to be in the net for 65 or 70 games.
Right, and when these teams are always talking about the goalie, it takes time for them to develop. When we're seeing a 22-year-old do this with already a ring in his pocket,
mm-hmm.
do what he's doing with Pittsburgh and may possibly guide them to another cup run. I mean, he's not going to get any love, and I think it's a little bit of injustice. I mean, it's very impressive to see what he's doing. And all we always talk about how it takes so much time for these goalies to develop. Devin Dubnyk, I mean, he's 30 years old. Carey Price is 29. Holtby's 29. These guys are all in their late 20s, and it's around then when they really started to hit it, right? For a 22-year-old to be doing that, I mean,
Do you put any premium on the fact that it looks like the Leafs are going to make the playoffs? It looks like the Blue Jackets are clearly going to make the playoffs. They've clinched a spot. The Penguins, to your argument, are a playoff team. Do you give any premium to the, to the players, the rookies, because their teams are going to be playoff bound while the Jets aren't going to be playing after the 8th of April?
I think you probably should. I don't know if the voters do as much as you'd think. But by the way, Joel, I do think Austin Matthews is going to win the Calder. And that's not because, you know, the NHL is Toronto-centric. It's not just that. I mean, Austin Matthews has had a great year.
Yeah.
He's got 35 goals. He broke Wendell Clark's record yesterday. I mean, if he ends up winning it, Drew, he deserves it.
And he's driving the play. He's doing a lot of things.
For
right?
me, I don't focus so much on who's going to end up winning it. For me, what's been fascinating about this year's regular season is that you arguably have the best rookie class maybe ever. Mm-hmm. And you certainly have the best race for the Calder since 2005. When it was Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, regardless of who wins it, to me, it doesn't even really matter. I don't really follow the NHL awards that closely. Like, whoever wins.
You will this year, and we'll talk about that later on in the show, though.
Well, yeah, I know what you're getting at there, but, I mean, it's probably going to go to Matthews, and Laine is going to end up probably finishing second or third, and it's going to be Werenski also in the top three or four, but. Mm-hmm. What Matthews is doing is pretty impressive. And to get back to your question, I think, you know, that should have a factor, should be a factor, I should say, Drew, that the Leafs are going to make the playoffs this year. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you take Austin Matthews off of that roster, I don't think the Leafs make the playoffs. You could say the same about McDavid and Edmonton, too.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that it's clear who the best players on both of those teams are. And I would be leaning towards Matthews as well at this point, simply because I think what he's doing and the fact that they're going to be a playoff team gives him a little bit of a boost in my books. And that's no slight to Patrick Laine, because Laine is probably going to win some Rocket Richard trophies somewhere down the line in his career, maybe next year or in a couple years from now. But I think right now, given the circumstances surrounding each of their teams, given the fact that, you know, that Matthews is going to be on a playoff team and he's driving the bus for a playoff team, I think that's going to put him over the edge, and it's probably going to be his trophy to win. Now, that being said, if Laine goes crazy over the next, you know, four or five games.
Even then, I'm not sure if it'll really change anything.
If he gets up to 40 or 42 goals or something,
sure.
then I'm willing to, you know, maybe reconsider it. But I still think he's got an uphill climb ahead of him.
And it's unfortunate, right, when you look at what Werenski's done and Matt Murray's done, and even Matthews' teammates. Marner. Sure. I mean, a tremendous season.
Marner and Nylander.
And that's the only way that things may get a little interesting if there's a vote split. But, I mean, again, who really cares about an award, right? I mean, it's like, honestly, when you fast forward 10 years down the road, does anybody really remember that kind of stuff? Not really.
Not usually. There's only one award that matters at the end at all, and it's how many rings you're wearing
exactly.
on your finger.
Yeah.
When we come back, Josh Cooper joins us. Josh, of course, is with Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy. We'll have a good time with our old friend, Josh. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday, the 29th of March. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy, we are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh, good evening. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Very well. Now, Josh, we have a lot in the hockey world to talk to you about, but I want to start, of course, with The Bachelor, as we do each and every time we have you on air. And my question for you, good sir, is now that I believe the latest season of The Bachelor has concluded, so my question is, what do you do with your spare time when The Bachelor is not on air?
That's a really good question. You know, what's really funny about that is I was talking to a friend of mine in Nashville the other day, a sports reporter there, and he's another diehard fan of the show. And it was on a Monday when I was text messaging with him, and I was like, wow, my Mondays feel way less fun without this show. It's like I feel like I'm just missing something right now. So, I mean, it's certainly a void, to be honest. Like, it's certainly I feel like I'm missing something without it because it's fun. It's an enjoyable way to spend your Monday evening.
Okay, hold on. More importantly, Josh, talk to us about meeting Corinne in the Fort Lauderdale airport.
Yes. So
and explain what that means for the rest of us.
Well, it was probably my favorite brush with celebrity I've ever had, though I am walking through Beverly Hills right now, so Lord knows that'll change in the next 5 minutes. But, so I'm in the Fort Lauderdale airport, and I look to my left, and I see Corinne from The Bachelor sitting there, and I go, you've got to be kidding me. Is this really Corinne? And so then I text message my wife, and I text message my friend Zach and Sarah, who we watch this show with every Monday. And I also emailed our TV editor at Yahoo to tell them all that Corinne was there. And all of them had the same response to me. It was, take a selfie. And I'm like, oh, come on, really? I don't want to take a selfie. She doesn't want to be bothered. Then they all brought up the same point, which is like, she's a reality TV star. Of course she wants to be bothered. So I was like, okay. So I walk up to her and I'm like, hey, so you're on The Bachelor, right? And she was like, yes. And I go, yeah, you know, some people want me to take a selfie with you. Is that okay? And she's like, sure, why not? So that is how that happened. And then shortly after we landed, because I don't like sort of tweeting out where people are and when, I may have tweeted out the photo, and I'm pretty sure I messaged said tweet to both of you fine gentlemen.
I didn't know what the hell it was about. That was the problem. But between you meeting Corinne in the Fort Lauderdale airport and Ezzy meeting the Fonz in the Fort Lauderdale airport last year,
whoa,
it's obviously
really?
it's really the place for all celebrity sightings.
Yeah, best day of my life.
Yeah.
By the way, Josh, did you talk to Corinne about Raven at all?
You know, it was a very short interaction. It was just, you know, can I take a selfie with you? Sure. Thank you very much. Safe travels. Okay, goodbye. And we actually ended up being on the same flight.
Nah.
But yeah, that's sort of how it all broke down. No, we did not talk about Raven or Vanessa and how Nick's quest for love eventually, or at least how we believed it would end. I actually got the Vanessa pick right in my bachelor pool. I just want to throw that out there. But I did have Vanessa and Rachel in my top two. So I may have lost out a little bit. Me and my friends, we came in second place in our pool, so I was very excited about that.
Mazel tov, I guess, but well, let's move on to the world of hockey, because you lost me at, you know, Raven, I think, is what the name was. Josh, you had a great, you recently sat down with Bill Foley, great interview. It's available on Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy. We'll send out a link to it as well. You know, then, you know, the Raiders announced they're moving to Vegas. That's going to happen in 2019 or 2020. Obviously, the NHL will have a head start on it. How important is it now for the Golden Knights to get out of the gates strong, given that the Raiders' arrival is impending just down the line?
Well, I think it was important anyway, just because I think there's a lot of sort of thought out there, independent thought, not NHL thought, that Vegas is not a good hockey market. And I think that they had to really come out of the gate strong to just show that they were. And look, in my conversations with Bill Foley, he's the type of guy, when you talk to him, he inspires an incredible amount of confidence that this is going to happen, from both a player personnel perspective, that he's hired some good people there, and also from a PR perspective, because, I mean, they're going to have Cirque du Soleil performing at these games. I mean, this is going to be pretty cool for the most part. But I mean, I think that they were going to begin with anyway. But with the Raiders coming, it definitely ups the ante a little bit. How much, it's really tough to know. I mean, everyone, and myself included, we bring out the example of what happened in Nashville when the Predators and the Titans arrived at the same time. This is going to be a little different just because the Raiders are coming 2 years later. And the NFL is, I don't know, I guess you could say it's more in the downswing than the upswing, whereas back in 1998, the NFL was kind of starting to become the behemoth that it truly is right now with the beginning of fantasy football and everything else. But it's going to be really interesting to see. And I know that sounds kind of cliche to some degree, but I mean, I think part of the reason why the NHL did this is because they want to be first into Vegas and be successful in it. But I think it would almost be naive to think that they didn't assume someone else would follow suit. I just think that none of us thought it was going to be the Raiders, because I do remember that when Gary Bettman was asked questions about the NFL and Vegas, he was always like, well, you know, if they come, you know, it was always very kind of off-putting to some degree, the NFL and the potentiality of an NFL team moving there. And now it's a reality, so we'll see what happens.
Josh, this afternoon the NHL announced that in June, teams protected and available player lists for the expansion draft are going to be made public. Did the NHL have any choice in this matter?
Yeah, I think the NHL probably wanted it to happen. I think from what I could gather, this is more of a general manager's type thing. And I think that it was actually a lot closer than people give it credit for. I mean, I think that it wasn't exactly sort of, you know, all 31, I'm throwing Vegas in there, all 31 general managers said we don't want this, and the league said we want this. I personally believe that it was quite a bit closer. I think that there's a lot of general managers who do understand the fact that there is a marketing element to this league, that it needs, that, you know, that hurt feelings regardless of what they are. I mean, these players are still been, you know, fabulously well compensated, and that this is something that I think increases the entertainment value. I mean, the one thing that I was really interested by was how Bill Foley said he didn't want the list to be publicized. And this is a guy that wants everything publicized. I mean, it was kind of funny how when I talked to him yesterday, you know, the league was very cautious about when I talked to them at the general managers meetings about the location of the expansion draft, the awards, and whether and how, and I guess how all of the events would be televised. I mean, there was something, it was something that the effect of they would not or could not say what it was going to be. And Bill Foley just comes right out there and he's just like, yeah, it's going to be an NBC Sports and Rogers. It's going to be nationally televised, and it's going to be a T-Mobile Arena. I mean, you know, he's a guy that wants everything out there, but it's interesting to me that he didn't want this out there.
Staying in the desert, Josh, how would you rate John Chyka's first season as the managing general of the Coyotes?
Incomplete, and I only say that because you're going to have to grade him a few years from now. It's one of those things with him where I think the way general managers look at kind of rebuilding processes is that it's easy to be able to accrue young talent. It's just whether or not A, it's the right type of young talent, or B, you can develop it into being viable NHL material or making them viable NHL type players. And he's accrued a lot of young assets. And the way I see it is he's done it in a way that is creative and creative to a greater degree than other general managers have been able to accrue young assets in the past. I mean, he saw the Arizona Coyotes salary cap space, which is something that everyone kind of sees as a negative, and turned into a positive by saying, you know, we're not going to spend this money anyway. There's a lot of bad contracts in this league. Maybe we could get some young assets out of it. And through that, he was able to get Lawson Crouse and Jacob Chikrin. So he's been able to get a lot of young guys, but the question is, are they the right young guys? Are these the types of people who can really help this organization move forward in the future? I'm not 100% positive.
Josh Cooper's our guest on NHL This Week. You know Josh from his quality work at Yahoo's Puck Daddy and his love affair with The Bachelor.
Josh, you used to cover the Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. There's a huge game in Nashville tomorrow night between the Leafs and the Preds. The Preds lost their last game to the Boston Bruins 4-1. When you look at this Nashville Predators team right now, they're third in the Central, and they've quietly won 7 of their last 10 games. They'd match up against the Minnesota Wild right now. Is this a team that you can see winning a round or two in the playoffs this year?
I can see them winning a round. I can't see them. Here's the thing with the Western Conference right now. There's two teams to me that are playing a cut above the rest. That's Chicago Blackhawks and Anaheim Ducks. If those two teams win their divisions, they are going to meet each other in the conference final. There's no doubt in my mind that's what's going to happen. I mean, with the Ducks, it's a little bit different just because, I mean, they could fall back just only because based on Edmonton and San Jose and Calgary all kind of being bunched up there. But if they do win the division, they're able to stay in the Pacific Division playoffs. I really can see them going far and playing Chicago. I mean, Nashville has a really nice team. It's probably one of the better teams I've seen them have in a number of years. A lot of their younger players have kind of taken a really nice little step forward here. The problem is that they're just – it's the problem with Nashville every year is that they're just not the Chicago Blackhawks. And when you're in the same division as a team that has Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith all in their primes, you're going to struggle to beat them. And that's just the way it is. And it just feels like that's the way it's going to be again for another year.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. The last time the Kings and the Flames met, Drew Doughty was elbowed in the face by Matthew Tkachuk. Tkachuk was suspended for a couple of games. Post-game, Doughty called Tkachuk out as a dirty player, for, you know, particularly for being a rookie. Earlier, I believe this was yesterday, Tkachuk said that he expected more from Doughty than to go right to the media and start complaining. In this instance, is there a player who is right and a player who is wrong? And is it incumbent on Matthew Tkachuk as a rookie to maybe keep his mouth shut when he's talking about a perennial Norris Trophy winner or candidate to win it in Drew Doughty?
Well, two things. First off, I love the fact that Matthew Tkachuk spoke his mind because really, I mean, that's basically that's what we want as reporters in this league is for that to happen. I like the fact that Drew Doughty spoke his mind because, again, that's what you want people to do. I mean, clearly Drew Doughty didn't seek out the media to speak those quotes. I've never seen a hockey player try to find a media member in a locker room to say, hey, I'm gonna rip on this player. That's just not the way it works. So I don't see it happening that way. But it's something that, you know, it's just a little spicy. It spices up this game a little bit. It's kind of fun. It creates a storyline. And, I mean, look, you know, Matthew Tkachuk's a young kid. Drew Doughty is a little older, and he's won a Norris Trophy, but he's still going to be on the Kings for a long time. And these are two guys who are going to end up facing each other for a good number of years, both locally in the Pacific Division and in the NHL, and probably internationally with, I'm sure, Tkachuk's going to end up on Team USA at some point, and Doughty's going to be on a Team Canada-type situation again in some international event, and it's a fun little rivalry, so good for them, and it'll be enjoyable for the most part.
He can talk about hockey. He can talk about reality TV. Is there anything you can't talk about, Josh?
No.
Just don't answer
that
one.
No, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff. I mean, Game of Thrones, actually. I've never watched it. Okay. I need to get into that.
Yeah, you and me both. I haven't seen an episode either. In any event, Josh Cooper is with Yahoo Sports. You can read his work at Puck Daddy. Josh, always appreciate your time, buddy. Good talking with you.
Great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We'll do it again soon. When we come back, we'll talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. The expansion draft, the protection lists are going to be released public, and the draft picks are going to be announced on TV. You're listening to NHL This Week. Coming up next, the Golden Knights conversation on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
And the reality was I felt like there are a lot better ways to spend $750 million than on bringing the Oakland Raiders to Las Vegas. Spend it on police, firemen, and teachers, and have the best of all, have all three be the best in the country. But I guess we're going to make a $750 million investment in a stadium.
Vegas Golden Knights owner Bill Foley dropping some truth bombs.
It's a little dirt.
Yeah. On the NFL, on Mark Davis, the owner of the currently Oakland Raiders, soon to be Vegas Raiders. Not so happy the fact that the NFL is coming onto his territory, his land there in Vegas, and going to be some competition for his Golden Knights. So let's start with that question. Do you think that the Raiders coming to Vegas is going to have a significant impact on Bill Foley and his Golden Knights, or do you think it's sort of two separate issues altogether? One plays 41 home games, one plays 8 home games, not including exhibition.
Well, I think the bigger question, Drew, is if the Raider Nation decides to cross the Nevada-California border, should they be scared in Vegas? Have you seen those guys?
I saw them torch. I've told this story before, but the last time the Raiders were in the Super Bowl against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it was in
03
in San Diego.
Is that the Trent Dilfer year?
That was the Brad Johnson year. Was Brad Johnson?
Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon and Brad Johnson. It was the year after Gruden was traded. Remember, Gruden was the coach of the Raiders.
Definitely.
He was traded to the Tampa Bay to the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
I was at that Super Bowl in San Diego, and I remember the Saturday night before the Super Bowl, And because, of course, the proximity from Oakland to San Diego, not, I mean, it's far, but they can drive, people can drive down easily.
I love this, by the way, Joel. It's like story time with Drew.
Well, so we're in downtown San Diego, where, you know, where the streets are all blocked off and they're just teamed with people, filled with people, Raiders fans predominantly, you know, walking the streets before the Super Bowl. And I remember I get to the I get to an intersection, I look over to my right, and there's a big Hummer. And the Hummer's got a big Tampa Bay Buccaneers flag in the window and everything else. And we keep going. We start walk, turn around eventually and walk back towards it. And the intersection's all blocked off. You can't go any further because Raiders fans torched the Hummer.
Any arrests?
Like, there weren't people in the car, though.
No, no, no. The car was just sitting on the street. It was just parked. And they just, you know, they saw a Buccaneers flag and... Well, they weren't going to stand for that.
Wow.
Yeah. So Raider fan is a bit of an interesting character.
Those fans are awesome. I love them.
The Black Hole is aptly named for a reason. In any event, going back to the impact on the NHL team.
Well, yeah, and I think it remains to be seen, right?
But yeah.
Because, first of all, the NFL isn't coming until 2019, right?
That's the minimum, right? 20 exactly when the stadium might be finished.
So we're not going to see it, obviously, in the first 2 or 3 years. Yeah. But I think, in a way, you're talking about apples and oranges, Drew, because it's not just the NHL schedule. It's the fact that you're talking about two different sports. So I think when you're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights, we already know that they have commitments for season tickets, similar to the drive to 13,000 that we had in Winnipeg. And they've been actually quite successful with the amount of season tickets that they've sold in Vegas. I think you're probably going to see more of an impact in the TV market and in the corporate area, maybe when the NFL and the NHL are kind of competing. But I don't necessarily know that there isn't enough corporate dollars to go around in Vegas, right, Drew? There's a lot of money there.
As long as the economy doesn't take a spiral, right? That's it.
That's the X factor. That's the catch. Because Vegas was severely hit by the economy and the recession and the housing crisis back in with 08, that would have been, I guess.
I'm fairly confident that Bill Foley and Mark Davis are going to be able to coexist here. And, you know, different seasons.
That haircut, Mark Davis.
He's got a terrible
Is he the only guy that still rocks the bowl cut?
Lloyd Christmas.
Is that even a bowl cut? Like, what is that?
It's a bowl cut. It's the bad
homemade
bowl cut. It's, I mean, Mark can, you know, he can spend a little bit. He can spend a little bit of money and get a better haircut. But I guess that's his trademark now, is a terrible haircut. Let me ask you guys this. Moving away from the impact of the Raiders on it, Joel, we'll start with you.
Sure.
NHL make the right decision in publicly releasing the list of those players who will be protected and those players who will be unprotected by the other 30 NHL clubs?
Absolutely. This is an opportunity to stay relevant in a time when, I guess, the Cup will have just concluded and then you got the draft coming up a little later on. It's a unique time that it was a no-brainer to me, especially when the Vegas Knights were going to have the lists anyways, right? So now you have a competitive imbalance. You know, if they get the list and nobody else gets the list, and a little cricket action going on there. So I think it's good for hockey to have it televised and everybody can have some fun with it. I think most lists are going to be telegraphed going into it. But, you know, there might be some surprises with some buyout packages going on in the meantime from now till then. So it's a great idea, and I think it was a no-brainer, Drew.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joel. I think that this was the right decision they made. And you touched on it, Joel. I think the owners and the general managers in the NHL probably didn't want to reveal these lists. But when you talk about, you know, the imbalance, I mean, there would be an imbalance if Vegas is allowed to see all of these lists, but the other teams aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole, you know, public aspect of this. Fans want to see these lists, right? So I think you are going to open it up to a bigger audience, Drew, if you release these lists, because I don't think a lot of fans, unless you're in Vegas, are going to want to tune in to this because you could easily just go online and find out who they picked anyways, right? But if you know, you know, you can compare the unprotected players, you know, to other teams and all of that and who's exposed. I think it adds that fan element to it. So, again, I think this is the right decision, even though there were definitely some owners and GMs who probably wanted to keep it secretive.
There'd be some pools of, you know, pick your own Vegas squad almost, you know?
Well, I mean, there already are, just sort of with people blindly throwing darts at the who they think will be protected or not protected.
Yeah, they did that on ESPN this week.
They did that on ESPN. If you go to, I mean, you can create your own expansion team. If you go to Cap Friendly, they have a tool there that allows you to create your own, you know, Vegas Golden Knights team.
Yeah.
Just sort of based on assuming, you know, who's going to be protected and not protected. It's the NHL is finally making a logical decision when it comes to keeping themselves in the spotlight. They are going to, I mean, the late June period is a bit of a – I mean, the NFL is not in peak season at that point in time, so it's a little bit of a quiet time for the NFL. You know, free agency is done for, the draft is done for, maybe there's a little mini camp action, but it's usually a bit of a quiet time for the NFL. The NBA, finals will be happening at the similar time. We're sort of into the dog days of the baseball season at that point.
Yeah.
The NHL should own, I mean, at least, you know, in Canada for sure, but in some relevant markets as well, it should own the calendar from the 17th of June right through Canada Day, because, you know, the 17th, I believe, is the last possible day, or maybe the 14th is the last possible day that the Stanley Cup can be awarded. Okay, so you got that going there on the 14th of June. Then you're going to have this awards and the expansion draft list and everything else. It sounds like they're going to announce the NHL awards and the players who are selected by the Vegas Golden Knights on the same night, on June the 21st. It's all going to be one big spectacle that night, where at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas, there's going to be one stage. If you read this Bill Foley interview with Josh, like we were just talking about, on one stage they're going to announce the expansion draft picks, and on another stage they're going to announce the NHL awards. And then they're going to go straight from there on, you know, on Wednesday the 21st, they're going to go right to Chicago on Friday the 23rd for the NHL draft.
Yeah.
And they're going to go right from there, they're going to go into free agency on July the 1st.
Yeah.
So you have about a 17-day window there where the NHL should own a lot of the, let's call it, hot stove of the various sports that are going on.
Yeah, Drew, at the end of the day, it makes the event more fan-friendly and more compelling to watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what everybody wanted. So
exactly.
Like what Drew said, I mean, it's a logical choice. I mean, the NHL doesn't always, you know, go with their fans, and this is what a lot of the fans wanted, and it's the easy decision. I wonder, you talk about dominating the market and soaking up that spotlight during that time. That's part of the reason why they're probably reluctant on going to the Olympics as well, because the NFL concludes there's no baseball.
Yeah.
NBA, I'm not sure how popular it is in some markets. That chunk in February is when the NHL really gets that full spotlight too, and especially, you know, they get the Sunday games, the rivalry games on weekends and all that kind of stuff. I mean, on top of the league not wanting to shut down, that's got to be part of the reason as well, right?
They own the calendar at that point in time. It's interesting you make that point. If, I don't know if you guys saw Insider Trading last night, but they talked about that because NBC and NBC Sportsnet, of course, have the Olympic rights.
Yeah.
So if the NHL chooses not to go to the Olympics, you're almost going to have a two-week window when NBC and NBC Sportsnet aren't able or aren't that interested in broadcasting NHL games nationally because they have the Olympic rights.
And NBC might tell the NHL, you better get your ass over there.
I think that's the behind-the-scenes conversation that's happening right now, is that the NBC is saying, we're paying you a lot of money. We don't care that it interrupts a bit of your season. You get over there, because the NHL can't go dark on a U.S. national basis for 2 weeks in the middle of February, and that's what they're talking about is going to happen if they don't go to the Olympics.
It's fascinating because they have such an affinity over going at China, but they want to bypass 2018, right? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Something that also doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of our audience, especially our younger audience, is that the Edmonton Oilers are a playoff team. Dean Millard of TSN 1260 in Edmonton is going to join us next to talk about the playoff-bound Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Dean Millard. You know Dean from our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dean, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Not a problem, fellas. Good to be here.
Likewise, pleased that you could join us, Dean. Let me ask you, where were you the last time the Edmonton Oilers clinched a playoff spot?
I was in the city here in Edmonton. I was working at Global Television at the time. And I don't know if I was in the building the night they clinched or if I was just at the station, but I was around the team for the last playoff run, so I can remember how much fun it was. Not that to say that this year's Oilers team is going to go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, because that was certainly part of the fun of the last time the Oilers made the playoffs. But just being in the playoffs is a good feeling for Oilers fans today.
Yes, certainly. We probably, when they made it 10 years ago, you probably didn't think it would take an entire decade to see them back in there. But here they are, and now the monkey is off their back. And Dean, they're currently second, or tied for second, in the Pacific Division with the San Jose Sharks, 2 points behind the Anaheim Ducks. Yet, nobody that I really... I'm never hearing anybody say that the Oilers are a real threat in the Western Conference this year, that it's still, you know, the Anaheim Ducks division to win, or the division, you know, after, you know, to win a couple rounds, or the Sharks are going to win a couple rounds. Are the Oilers almost a little disrespected entering this playoffs?
Maybe a little bit, but it might be valid, too, because it's been 10 years since they've been there. You know, Milan Lucic leads the team with 101 playoff games. The next closest guy to that is Benoit Pouliot with 54, and he's had, until recently, a terrible season. So they don't have a lot of playoff experience, and they, you know, their coach does, their coaching staff does, and their GM does, because he's won a cup before, and Todd McClellan has been in the playoffs with the San Jose Sharks. But they certainly can win a division. Or they certainly can win. Well, they can win the division. Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility of finishing first in the Pacific Division. They're 1-1-1 against the Sharks with two games to go starting tomorrow night. They're 2-2 against the Ducks with one game to go. And they're 4-0 against the Flames this year. So they could win a playoff round. The only thing that's holding them back is themselves, I think.
Dean, do you think Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli gets enough credit for the job that he's done with the team? When he took over, the Oilers were a complete mess. He goes out and he trades for Cam Talbot. He trades Taylor Hall to the New Jersey Devils for Adam Larson. He signs Milan Lucic, and there are obviously other moves that he made there. But now you look at the Oilers, and they've clinched a playoff spot. And as you mentioned, they can end up winning the division this year.
Yeah, certainly he deserves a ton of credit. It's been interesting, and I'll be the first to say that I was not on board with the Taylor Hall trade. I thought if the Oilers are going to trade Taylor Hall, they should have gotten more than Adam Larson. But Adam Larson has been really, really good, way more physical than I ever remember him being in his draft year or watching him play when I did. He's been a steady influence, paired with Oscar Klefbom on the as the Oilers' number one D pairing. And you look at bringing in Adam Larson, but you also look at bringing in Chris Russell, and they brought in Matthew Benning, and they brought in Zach Cassian, and he brought in Patrick Maroon, and you mentioned Cam Talbot, who reportedly told the Oilers he wasn't going to sign with them and then had a change of heart when he got here. And, of course, you know, this is not possible without winning the lottery. Nobody is blind to that. But Peter Chiarelli has done a lot of great moves building around Connor McDavid with this version of the Edmonton Oilers.
Speaking of what's around Connor McDavid, is Leon Draisaitl getting enough attention?
He's starting to. 10th in the league in scoring with 70 points. And I think he's on an 8-game point streak right now. He's got 71 points, actually.
Yeah.
I think he's on an 8-game point streak right now. This guy is they're the highest scoring duo in the NHL. More than Crosby and Malkin, more than Kane and whoever else you want to pair with him, whether it's Panarin or it's Jonathan Toews, the way he's been playing lately. But Connor McDavid, along with Leon Draisaitl, is the highest scoring duo in the NHL, and it's not just McDavid. This is a legitimate player who, when he was drafted, there were concerns about his skating when he came out of the Prince Albert Raiders organization. He's fixed that. There's no more concerns about his skating. He's a big, strong he's a big, strong player that can play a finesse game. He can pass the puck on his backhand like nobody's business. And this is a guy that I'm excited to watch down the stretch in the playoffs. The last time he played in a playoff game was with Kelowna, and he was the Memorial Cup MVP.
Did we just lose Dean? I think we just lost Dean, so we're going to get him back on the line. Apparently, they didn't want him talking about Leon Draisaitl anymore.
And that Mem Cup, that's when Josh Morrissey was on that Kelowna Rockets team as well, right, guys?
I believe that would be a correct timeline, if you're not mistaken. So we're going to get Dean on the line to continue the conversation on the playoff-bound Edmonton Oilers. Really is amazing. I mean, 2 points behind the Ducks. There's no reason why they can't win that division. 7-2-1 in the last 10. The Ducks 8-1-1 in the last 10. San Jose Sharks almost were too far ahead of everybody, and so they've just been playing not very good hockey as of late, which has caused them to drop down into second place in that division.
Right, and assuming you don't win the division, all you don't want to do is end up dropping into that first wild card spot, because then you're going to play Anaheim, right?
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's going to... I mean, the Flames are 3 points behind the Oilers right now, so... Yeah, I guess it's possible that the Flames could catch up to them. I'm not
well,
really...
You're talking about the Oilers catching the Ducks, Drew. That's 2 points.
Yeah,
so.
And the Flames is catching
3 points.
So,
I mean,
you're right. It's possible.
There's always the chance of that happening. I just don't think that you want to slip into that wild card spot. So right now, you end up playing the Sharks in the first round. Not the greatest matchup, but as you said, Drew, the way the Ducks are playing, I don't think you want to play them either in the first round.
I think we have Dean back on the line. Dean, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what happened there, guys. I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me for some reason.
Well, it must be our technology here is a little... The hamster got a little tired of running
right.
in the wheel. Did we just lose him again? Okay. Apparently,
hello?
Hi, can you hear us, Dean?
I can, so, yeah.
This is radio magic is what you're hearing right now. You were talking about Leon Draisaitl. I'll let you keep going on that front, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem. He's big, strong, but can play a finesse game the way he passes the puck. Eventually, the Oilers will want to move him to center position because it's like having Crosby and Malkin. You know, you can load them up on one line, but they're probably more effective spread out. But for right now, they are playing together. They're the highest scoring duo in the NHL when it comes to players, whether it's they're outscoring Crosby and Malkin, they're outscoring Panarin and Kane, they're outscoring Backstrom and Alexander Ovechkin. It doesn't matter what duo you put up against them, they're the highest scoring duo. And I don't know if you heard me before, but there was concerns when Leon Draisaitl was drafted about his skating. Those are no longer any concerns. He's really worked on that part since he came out of the Prince Albert Raiders. And the last time he played in the playoffs, he was a Memorial Cup MVP for a losing Kelowna squad, so we know at least that he has some big game experience as well.
Dean Millard is our guest here on NHL This Week. Dean is with TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our sister station, talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Dean, at the trade deadline, the Oilers acquired David Desharnais from the Montreal Canadiens. How's he been since he came out west from back east?
He's been better than I expected. I wasn't a big fan of the trade when they made it. I didn't think a 5'7" at best centerman could help out the Edmonton Oilers, but he's been really good. He's paired up with Benoit Pouliot, who he has previous experience playing with in Montreal from a few years back, and Zach Cassian is the other guy on that line. And they've been an effective third line, especially last night. They forechecked really well. They got robbed of a goal on a bad early whistle from the referees, but they would have scored last night. And David Desharnais has been impressive. He's not lighting it up on the faceoffs, but then again, he's not being put in a position of having to win that many crucial draws. And he's made a couple of plays. He's a playmaker that has set up his line mates for a couple of good opportunities. So I've been pleasantly surprised by David Desharnais. I didn't think he would have this kind of an impact. Not that he's, you know, scoring 7 or 8 points in the last 7 or 8 games, but he's having a positive impact on the forecheck of the Edmonton Oilers.
Dean, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has 5 points in his last 3 games, although this year has been a little bit disappointing. He's got 39 points on the year, and I know he struggled big time with his defensive zone faceoffs. Is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins the X factor for the Oilers in the first round of the playoffs?
He could be. I think that entire line of Nugent-Hopkins, Eberle, and Lucic is going to be a special for the Edmonton Oilers because they're going to get the second toughest matchup, but they're also used to shut down other teams. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has almost morphed into a two-way center, a checking center, as opposed to an offensive guy that he was drafted as in his first overall when he was first overall in 2011. And that might change at some point, but right now that line needs to contribute and it needs to check. And it can't, Tom McClellan said the other day, it can't be at the expense of their offense, their checking ability. But they are going to get, you know, if they face the Anaheim Ducks, Ryan Kessler is going to obviously be out there against Connor McDavid. That means Ryan Getzlaff is up against Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And that's a tough matchup for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins because of the size and the strength of Ryan Getzlaff. So he has to be better than he has this season. I think he's got 16 goals now on the season. That's close to where Fernando Pisani was in 2006, and he went off with 14 or 13 goals in the playoffs. So maybe Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been saving him up for the postseason.
If we touch on the issue that could potentially roadblock this team from any type of postseason success, what would that issue be?
What would that issue be? Just inexperience and not being able to handle the moment, I think. I think this is a team that surprised a lot of people. I didn't have them in the playoffs when the season began. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. I picked them to be 9th, 10th in that range, but they've surprised me. But just maybe being not being conscious. Like Patrick Maroon talked about it today, that first 10 minutes of your first playoff game, you know, everything's off the charts as far as the intensity is concerned. And maybe them being overwhelmed by the moment might be their biggest undoing in the postseason, because they certainly have the team to be able to get the job done. They've proven that in the last little while. And if they get home ice advantage, they're playing a lot better at Rogers Place than they were earlier this season. So just staying out of their own way when it comes to a big moment, I think, could be the biggest factor for the Oilers.
Dean, we'll let you go on this last question. Six games to go in the regular season. Obviously, the Oilers want to finish as high as they possibly can in the Pacific Division. How do they balance the desire to keep winning and keep the good feelings going versus giving some players some rest, particularly Cam Talbot, who's started, I believe, 112 out of the Oilers' 76 games this season?
Yeah. This is going to be interesting, because I don't think the Oilers are going to rest too many players other than Cam Talbot in the back-to-back situation they have with the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe Laurent Brossoit gets a game against the LA Kings on April 4th, but I think that you're going to see this team go for it. Like, what do they have to lose? They're mostly young players. They can't be that tired because they haven't played a whole lot of hockey, although a couple of their players did play in the World Cup, and Leon Draisaitl. But maybe I could see, you know what, he's the one guy that I could see getting a little bit of rest, because he played in Olympic qualifying, World Championships for Germany, and he also played in the World Cup, and now he's played in the NHL. So maybe you could see him getting a game or two off down the stretch. But other than that, I think it's going to be the full gas pedal to the floor for this team going for a division title or at least home ice advantage in the postseason.
Dean Millard is with our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dean, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good night.
Likewise. When we come back, we talk about the Buffalo Sabres. A little bit of controversy surrounding the team in upstate New York. Could Dan Bylsma be on his way out? Talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
More interesting, though, from that Sabres-Jackets game, here's Sam Reinhart in the third period. Not sweating, he hasn't seen the ice, that's why. He missed the team meeting in the morning, so head coach Dan Bylsma glued him to the bench for the entire game.
Interesting times in upstate New York with the Buffalo Sabres. They're concluding yet another disappointing season. Clearly not going to be a playoff team. The Sabres 32, 33, and 12 so far this year. And things are getting a little bit heated, apparently. According to Mike Harrington, a good friend of this program, things are getting a little heated between a lot of the players and Dan Bylsma. Quote, "There's no question that there is a disconnect between Dan Bylsma and some of these players. There's no question that some of these players probably want a different coach next year," said Mike Harrington. Strong comments from a guy certainly plugged into the Buffalo Sabres. You know, obviously disappointing season, but can you foresee Dan Bylsma being out as the head coach in Buffalo 2 years into a five-year contract?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing just to be asking that question, right, guys? But when you talk about the Sabres team, I mean, what are they at, 76, 77 points right now? Last year they had 81 points, so they're basically exactly where you thought they would be, the exact same record, in essence, from last year, right, Drew? And, you know, north of the border, you have the Toronto Maple Leafs that are most likely heading to the playoffs. At the very least, they're significantly better in the points race than where the Buffalo Sabres are at. So I think, you know, this has been a disappointing season for the Sabres. I didn't have the Buffalo Sabres as a playoff team this year, Drew. So I think for me, I expected them to be where they are right now. But when you're talking about kind of the makeup of this team, you've kind of got a mixture of young players and veteran players. You know, you've got Kyle Okposo, who came over from the New York Islanders, but it's a bit of a weird mix, right? Ryan O'Reilly, kind of the grizzled veteran coming over from Colorado. Then you've got Evander Kane, who obviously came over from Winnipeg. But then you've got Jack Eichel, who is clearly, you know, the future leader of this team. I think he's going to be the future captain of this team, and he's having actually a very underrated season. He's been a point per game here.
Yeah.
So it's a very weird mix, in my opinion.
A lot of personalities there.
Yeah, Brian Gionta, who, you know, was towards the end of his career. Matt Molson, who I don't even know. I mean, is Matt Molson still in the NHL?
Same thing with Josh Georges. He's on the 16th fairway,
right,
probably.
So it's a bit of a weird mix. Like, where are you going from here, right? I don't even know. I think the biggest question mark, guys, is what is the identity of this team?
Well, is that Tim Murray's fault right now? Do we blame the head coach? I mean, first of all, I'm going to say I was kind of surprised when Bylsma got a five-year deal out of it. I never really thought that he was that a great coach, especially when he's with Pittsburgh. Lack of adjustments. Always preparing his team a little poorly. I mean, he got that cut back in 09 after taking over from Michel Therrien, but was that really him, or is that just a new guy coming in and then he just got them to that cup, and then after that, they had no success after that. Then you saw the Pens when they never had success. It was lack of adjustments from the bench. And when you look at the Sabres team, their structure is not really there. And so maybe when these players are voicing their concerns of what's going on with the coaching staff, maybe they're right. But at the same time, like what Mike Harrington said, these players have not earned the right to get a coach fired.
Well, here's further from Mike Harrington. Quote, the number of times we have been told by players on the record after games, well, things changed because we just went out and played. We stopped thinking and worrying where we were supposed to be on the ice. Harrington goes on to say, that's an indictment of the way Dan Bylsma has them playing. They want to go play free. That's the knock on Bylsma, is that he's so structured that he turns his players...
But is it the right structure? That's the key, right?
Well, he turns them from players to robots, and the players are so concerned about being in the quote-unquote right place at the right time that they get confused, and they often aren't in the right place, and it causes them to... have the breakdowns as a result.
Lack of adjustments, too.
Sure, absolutely. Lack of adjustments. He's very rigid in his systems, let's say.
I think Joel makes a really good point about the structure of this team, though. You know, we've watched the Buffalo Sabres this year play the Jets, and you go back to that win in January.
When the Jets blew the 3-0 lead.
And the Sabres have a decent team. They're not an easy team to play against, and they've got some players that like to play the body, guys like Evander Kane and Marcus Foligno and others. Sam Reinhart, by the way, you know, he's having a decent year, but when I've watched this team, and I haven't watched them admittedly much this year, but it does look like a team of individuals. Mm-hmm. And again, that kind of goes back to what I was saying about the identity of this team. Like, you know, Jack Eichel's having a nice year. Ryan O'Reilly's having a good year. Evander Kane even has, what does he have, 26 goals on the year. Yeah. So it's not like you don't have some individual successes on this team, but
it's not synergizing. It's
not a very good team, right? Yeah. It's a group of individuals. And by the way, I don't think Dan Bylsma is going to be fired, Drew, because as you mentioned, he's got 3 years left on his contract. But you wonder, if we're sitting here next year and the Sabres don't make the team, I think absolutely, Drew, the expectations for Tim Murray are make the playoffs next year.
So right now, would you...
Not that they weren't this year, but I'm saying I think there's going to be more heat on Dan Bylsma next year if this team is exactly where they are. Because they're exactly where they were last year.
Well, you have to put a bit of an asterisk, I think, next to their season, because they lost Eichel right before the season started with that high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
And he missed, what, the first...
30 games, I'd say, or what, 20?
Something like that.
Sure,
and that significant
hurt them,
number,
Drew,
probably 25 games. Yeah.
But
maybe 20 games.
It's a results business. If you don't
make
the playoffs...
Well, and that's the worst part for the Sabres, is that there's supposedly a significant, and I mean, this is Mike Harrington saying it, and Mike knows better than anybody. He's saying that there is a significant disconnect between, you know, the team and Dan Bylsma, and specifically between Jack Eichel and Dan Bylsma.
Yeah.
And if Eichel and Bylsma aren't getting along, I mean, Eichel's the future of the team. Which one of those two guys is more indispensable?
And yet you can't fire the coach just based on that, because you don't want to make Eichel look like a coach killer, right?
Well, you saw that in Montreal with Michel Therrien and P.K. Subban.
The
right?
difference is Therrien had been there for a while, right?
Right.
And, I mean, that's who knows what the real story linked to that one is. I mean, they're both gone now.
Sure.
You know? But, no, I agree with that. The culture change. So based on what you said, then, would you put this on Bylsma or on Tim Murray?
Are the ingredients there
for this team to be better than it is?
Eichel's injury notwithstanding? Well, you know, it's sort of a loaded question, because if they had Eichel healthy for the entirety of the season, if they had had Evander Kane healthy,
everybody else is
for
clicking
the entirety of the season, you wonder if they would be, you know, how many more points they would have had if they had Eichel for, you know, for the 20 games that he missed. Would they have another 10 points in the standings right now? Would they be closer to 86 points, which is the last wild card spot in the East? You can certainly make the argument that they would be. So it's sort of a difficult. I don't think you can justify firing Dan Bylsma, but at the same time, Dan Bylsma needs to get on a better relationship and get a better and be less rigid in his dealings with his players.
I think they have to get better in goal. I think Robin Leonard, even though Robin Leonard is a good goaltender, I think he can be better, and I think they can certainly improve the backup situation. And I think that defense, after Rasmus Ristolainen and after Zach Bogosian, I mean, it's not the best group of top six defensemen there.
Well, they acquired Dmitry Kulikov from Florida, and that has been an unmitigated disaster.
I think he's overrated.
I thought he was going to get shipped at the deadline.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't.
Does he have 5 points this year?
Something like that. I mean, again, that's another guy. Whether or not you think he's overrated or whether or not he is overrated, that's another guy that they were expecting to play significant minutes for them, who was injured at the start of the year.
-21.
I know. He's had a terrible year. But that's a guy who has never been able to get things on track this year in Buffalo due to injury.
I've been told plus minus isn't a statistic that you should use, so my apologies to the advanced stats crowd.
Yes, very good. That's nice of you to make nice with people on in the advanced stats community. It's an interesting scenario in Buffalo, you know, because if you fire Bylsma, that means Pegula's paying his salary for the next three seasons. And then are the inmates running the asylum at that point in time?
Well, that's the thing, right? If Eichel goes up to Pegula or goes to the higher-ups and voices his concern, and then all of a sudden Bylsma gets clipped, well, I guess you know exactly where that one came from. And then you have to start wondering if a coach wants to go there because he's now at the mercy of the players.
Well, is Jack Eichel LeBron James? LeBron James got his coach
fired.
No,
he's Jack Eichel.
I know. But does he have the sway over the team like LeBron James has? The answer to me is no, not yet.
No, yeah.
I mean, not yet.
Yeah, but he is the future star of the team, Drew.
I know, but in maybe another year, if Bylsma gets, I think Bylsma gets at least another year. Probably.
He's the current star of the team.
Yeah, but he's also not about to be a free agent. That's a bit of the difference there. If he was 1 year away from free agency and he went to ownership and said, "I don't like this coach. It's either him or me," then it's a different question altogether.
Yeah. There's going to be more pressure on Bylsma next year.
There certainly
will
be.
Should be.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by David Alter. Hopefully, continue the conversation that we briefly started on Saturday's program before the Buffalo Sabres, speak of the devil, so rudely interrupted us. David Alter's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. I am your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Joel Marcoux and Ezra Ginsberg. You're listening to NHL This Week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program David Alter. When we last heard from David, he was being scooped up by the Buffalo Sabres on Saturday. David, hopefully we won't have that issue again this evening. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. No, this time I'm in Chicago awaiting my connection to Nashville. So if you hear some ambient noise, it just adds some color to the radio.
Yes, there's nothing quite like good old O'Hare Airport making a connection through there. David, pleased that you're able to join us while you are en route from Toronto to Nashville for the latest biggest game of the season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were able to defeat the Florida Panthers last night by a 3-2 margin. They have a much stiffer test tomorrow night against the playoff-bound Predators. Maple Leafs just focused on the game, the next game ahead, and just say, let's take care of what we can control, which is, winning the games, and then that'll, hopefully result in us being a playoff team?
Yeah, that's pretty much what they've been doing all season long. It's funny. None of them want to kind of looked ahead. The only player who's kind of been open about looking ahead and in a positive way is Nazem Kadri, being like, you know, sometimes I look into the future and I see some good things. So, I mean, that's his motivator. That's what he does. The rest of the team, Mike Babcock, has always been focused about the game coming up, getting the job done, and making sure that they don't get too far ahead of themselves. They're kids that can easily get off track. But some of the younger players on the team, like an Austin Matthews, is just so full of poise that you wouldn't know that he's a 19-year-old. He's mature beyond his years to the point where it seems as though he seems to be exactly what Toronto needed in order to not get too ahead of themselves and be in this position that a lot of people didn't think they would be in right now, just seven games out and in a playoff position at the moment.
David, you tweeted about this earlier today. Curtis McElhinney started last night's game after Freddie Anderson left the game against Buffalo with that injury. Is it safe to say that Freddie Anderson's going to start tomorrow night in Nashville?
I think so. I mean, they were kind of playing coy about if he was going to be healthy enough, and they were going to discuss it on the plane ride over. But right after that, they sent Garrett Sparks, who is their third goaltender, right back down to the Marlies. So he did not make the trip with them. So that's as good of an indication as any. I don't think they would do that just so that Anderson could back up. I think he's all ready to go. He said he was feeling ready, that they were just going to wait and talk to the goalie coach on the plane ride over. But obviously before that, making that corresponding move, they only have two goalies. So he's definitely going to play. And I guess the Leafs have dodged the bullet in that respect, because Curtis McElhinney, as good as he can be at times, there's always question marks about if he was capable of doing it over a big stretch, a stretch they had not seen over the course of his long career now as a backup in the NHL. And Frederick Anderson has been the MVP for the Maple Leafs, especially in March, going 6-1-2 and being the best player out there on the ice, getting the Leafs some results that maybe half of those could have gone the other way.
You touched on Kadri a couple of minutes ago. We know we talk about Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and rightfully so, but here's Kadri quietly putting together his best offensive season with 30 already on the year. How has his game changed under Babcock's tutelage?
I think it's been more defensive focus. I mean, he did set that new career high in goals and points, is getting up there as well. And from a points per game average, it's kind of a little bit near where he was in 2013, but he came out and said it, that he wants to be known as a guy who can win the selfie. And that's a totally different player than someone who just wants to be offensive. And ever since Babcock came in and took a chance on him when he had so much wrong going for him leading up to this whole rebuild the Leafs were going through, he matured. He cleans his act. He doesn't show up late to practice anymore, like he did that one time where he got suspended by the Maple Leafs for a couple of games. For conduct that wasn't as a professional. He's turned his life around to the point where he wants to be a pro. And one of his quotes earlier in the season, he was kind of saying that the team didn't give up on me, so I don't want to give up on them. And so I think that's kind of turned the corner in terms of extending the next chapter of what Nazem Kadri is going to be. So he's getting these points because he's playing in situations matched up against the opposing team's top line. He's persevering over it, and he's limiting his mistakes. And it's a lot different than the player we saw when he was under Randy Carlyle and I guess some of the other coaches that he had before Mike Babcock got in here.
David Alter is our guest on NHL This Week. David covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for The Athletic in Toronto. David, if the playoffs were to begin today, the Leafs would be matched up in a Battle of Ontario against the Ottawa Senators. It's looking likely that the Senators or the Washington Capitals will be the Leafs' first-round opponent. I suppose the Blue Jackets still have a chance there as well. Do the Maple Leafs match up better against a certain team as they enter into this the last few games before the playoffs? Do they match up well against the Senators as opposed to against the Capitals or against the Blue Jackets, etc.?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's not sound like I'm taking a knock on the Leafs. We haven't really seen them in the playoffs in a while to really kind of know who's matched up better or how it works. This whole divisional alignment makes it really messed up, because yeah, you could say the Ottawa Senators are the better matchup because, A, a lot of people would like to see that. The rivalry's there. They've had four playoff series against each other in the past, and Toronto's won all four of them, so they've got history on their side, and there's a lot of that. But Ottawa's been playing well. Washington could very well be the President's Trophy winner again. And it just messed up how three of the best teams in the NHL right now seem to be focused in that division, and the Leafs are kind of a benefactor of that because perhaps they should have one of the tougher Atlantic, or maybe, sorry, make that the Metropolitan Division opponents if it was under an old system. So it's tough to say. I think the Ottawa Senators match up pretty well. They seem to get up for those games and play really well against them, where everyone's kind of calling for Washington to kind of turn that corner where they haven't in years past, and they made some big-time acquisitions at the deadline as well. So I think the Ottawa Senators, I think a lot of people would rather see that if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan or even if you're within the organization as opposed to the Capitals.
David, one of those rookie forwards that I find that doesn't get talked about that much, at least here in Winnipeg and across the NHL, I think it's different in Toronto, is Zach Hyman. It might be because he's a little bit older at 24 years old, but he's playing on the top line there with Austin Matthews and William Nylander. Do you think that Mike Babcock stays with Zach Hyman on the top line, or do you think they maybe try a different teammate, line mate for Austin Matthews?
He's going to stick with him for a while and maybe even next year. I mean, he said earlier today he wasn't sure where he was going to earmark Matthews in terms of line mates, but the number one thing he knew was that he was going to have Zach Hyman on his wing, but that's because of the type of player Zach Hyman is. If Mike Babcock goes to this methodology, which he used in Detroit, he's used it for teams at the national level that he's coached, which is he wants, you know, you got the playmaker superstar up the middle, you've got a skilled winger on one side, and then you've got the guy who's going to get the puck for both of them, and that's what he says Zach Hyman does. And for the most part, he does do that. And it's just guys who just work hard in the gym and keep their conditioning to a level that they can do what they have to do, sacrifice themselves to get the puck to the guys who can finish. And so that's what has allowed Zach Hyman to kind of flourish. And what's helping Zach Hyman is he doesn't get talked about a lot across the league, but this is a true born and raised Toronto Maple Leafs fan that's living out his dream. And so there's no shortage of motivation for him. He turned down an opportunity to kind of sign with the Panthers, who had his rights, and eventually kind of earmarked his way to kind of push his way to the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's where he's always wanted to be, nowhere else. And I think the best Zach Hyman you're ever going to get is from Toronto for that reason alone.
You described Austin Matthews as mature beyond his years. Is the captaincy in his sights?
That's a good question. A colleague of mine at The Athletic, James Myrtle, posed that question. And I think it's definitely when, not if.
Yeah.
There's definitely that. I mean, look at it this way. We talk about Connor McDavid across the league, and a lot of people would say Connor McDavid is the best player. I mean, it's subjective in a lot of ways, but many people would take that position. And Connor McDavid's taken the Edmonton Oilers to the playoffs for the first time in 10 years, and he's totally changed the landscape of that franchise. With Austin Matthews, well, he's had a better support group in his first year, but it's very possible that he is a big reason why the Leafs make the playoffs in his first year. So it's hard to not follow that same track if Edmonton has done it and they show no ill effects of giving the captaincy to him. I don't see why you don't give it to Matthews at training camp or just before the start of the regular season next year.
David, we'll let you go on this last question. You've been around Mike Babcock for a couple of seasons now. What do you make of Chris Chelios' comments from earlier this week that, you know, the Detroit Red Wings will have an easier time luring free agents now that Babcock has moved to Toronto, and that, you know, in the flip side to that is that the Leafs will have trouble acquiring veteran free agents because, quote, no veteran free agent is going to want to come in and play for Mike Babcock?
I saw those comments. I think that there is some truth to it, but I would say that there's truth to that of every player or every coach, I should say. The only thing that's really surprising is that Chelios would actually go that far and say that on record somewhere. That's what really shocked me about that. I mean, there's no shortage of stories where you hear of Mike Babcock having battles with certain players. It doesn't even just happen with veteran players. It happened with guys who don't play, like Frank Corrado. It happened with Milan Mikolic, who got sent down to the minors after five games this season in the regular season. There's been those kind of comments. I've heard them from players. There's Valtteri Filppula, who played under Babcock once and blocked a trade to come from Tampa to Toronto as part of a bigger reported deal to that included Brian Boyle. So it doesn't surprise me. I don't think it's exclusive to Babcock, though. I'm pretty sure there are a lot of players, former players, young, old, that have had battles with certain head coaches across the league. What surprises me the most is that Chelios would go on record in a public forum and say what he said, and that he truly, and some of it is kind of contradictory too. So it doesn't surprise me, but I don't know if it's necessarily true, because I think people are going to want to play for Mike Babcock. People are going to want to not play for Mike Babcock young.
David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for The Athletic in Toronto. He joins us from Chicago, where he's en route to Nashville tomorrow night's Leafs Predators game. David, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for doing this. Travel safe.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot.
Do it again soon. Take care, David. Thanks very much. When we come back, we'll do a standings update. We'll do a scoreboard update. We'll talk about what's going on in and around the playoff races. One final segment to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. I want to give a shout-out, of course, first to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. These are all fine Winnipeg local businesses. We encourage you to support them because they support Legal Curve Hockey. Without them, the show would not be possible, so a big thank you to those fine businesses. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard, where it is a typically quiet Wednesday night. Perhaps a Stanley Cup preview? The Chicago Blackhawks doing battle with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and in Pittsburgh, with 15 seconds to go in the first period, the Blackhawks are up 4-0 on the Penguins.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, holy smokes is right. You know, the
two
Chicago,
quick ones, I guess, right?
Well, they got, two quick ones there in the last, they got two goals in the last 39 seconds of the period to really blow that game open. So now 4-0 Blackhawks over the Penguins. Obviously can't read a ton into that. Both those teams are going to have hope for long playoff runs ahead of them.
Yeah,
Blackhawks, I think, are better positioned for that run than the Penguins, simply because the Penguins are likely to match up against the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round, and I think that's going to be a tough matchup for the Penguins. But boy, oh boy, that would be a fun Stanley Cup final if the Blackhawks and the Penguins could meet come mid-June for Lord Stanley's mug. Also, later on today, the last three games still yet to get underway. The LA Kings and the Calgary Flames, as we had mentioned, the rematch between Matthew Tkachuk and Drew Doughty. Perhaps Jerome Iginla's final game ever in Calgary.
Yeah.
As a member of the LA Kings, if he chooses to go out and retire at the end of the season, that would be Iggy's final game in Calgary, so there could be some emotion behind in that one. The Capitals and the Avalanche in a, that's quite a mismatch, I would argue, battle between one team that's going to win the President's Trophy or in the running to win the President's Trophy and one team that is the worst team in the NHL by a country mile.
Speaking of the Avs, Tyson Jost leaving UND to sign with the Avs.
I just saw that. So an injection of talent into a Colorado Avalanche roster that certainly needs it.
Avalanche of mess over there for sure.
Certainly they're going to be an absolute disaster, as we've talked about on this show really all season long. And the final game on tonight's docket, the St. Louis Blues head into Arizona to meet the Arizona Coyotes in a game between one playoff team and one non-playoff team. Let's take a look at the playoff standings as they currently stand. We start with the Eastern Conference. The Capitals, they have a 3-point lead up on the Blue Jackets and a 5-point lead up on the Penguins atop the Metropolitan Division. if you're the Penguins, are you all of a sudden an underdog if you have to go to Columbus and meet them in the first round of the playoffs?
I wouldn't say you're an underdog. If anything, you're hurting a little bit, so that would maybe be the only reason that you're not as heavily favored over the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? Especially on defense, right? You're talking about Chris Letang.
Yeah.
You're talking about Ollie Matta. You're talking about Ron Hainsey.
Are these guys supposed to be ready for the playoffs?
This time of the year, it's hard to tell. You know, I would suspect at least some of those guys will be ready.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're not going to be at 100%, but then again, who is at 100%
right
now?
That's a good point. I wonder if they're just resting some of these bodies. I mean, I haven't looked up on some of these injuries.
Yeah, and we saw Pittsburgh and Columbus play several years back. I believe that was 3 years ago, and it was a pretty good battle. So when you're talking about the President's Trophy race right now, I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets are 3 points behind. So in theory, they could win it. So Washington is obviously trying to separate themselves a little bit more from Columbus.
Yeah.
But a first-round matchup, and when you're talking about the Blue Jackets and the Penguins, you're going to be facing the hottest goalie in the NHL, right, in Sergei Bobrovsky. So I'd still take the Penguins in a seven-game series, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to seven games.
That would be a slugfest for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
Dubinsky and Sidney Crosby will have more than one war in the course of that battle.
And there is no easy way out, because whoever wins that one, who do you get after that? The Capitals.
Got Washington Capitals. If you head over to the Atlantic Division, the Canadians, they have a four-point lead on the Senators, so they're certainly not home and cool, but they have a little bit of breathing space. Senators, four-point up on the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs, a point up on the Boston Bruins, though. Bruins hold down the final wild card spot and have been able to put a little bit of space between them and the Tampa Bay Lightning. 3 points separate the Lightning and the Bruins, although the Lightning do have that one game in hand.
Yeah.
Bruins have won two in a row after that nasty losing streak earlier, a couple weeks ago, really, where they had lost four, or I think it was even five in a row. A big win for the Bruins on home ice last night, defeating the Nashville Predators by a 4-1 margin. Is it now between Tampa Bay and Boston for that final playoff spot? Are you willing to write the Islanders out yet, or is it still too soon to say that the Islanders are done?
They're 1 point behind, so you can't write them off, Drew. And for
one
that
point
matter,
behind Tampa, for the record.
Right, and you can't write off Carolina. And you laughed at me 3 weeks ago when I said, you know, don't count out Carolina. But they've won seven of their last 10. They're 7-0-3 in their last 10.
Mm-hmm.
They won their last game last night against Detroit. And what's going to be really interesting to see is tomorrow's matchups. You've got Tampa Bay playing Detroit. You've got the Islanders at Philly. And then you've got Carolina, as we talked about, playing Columbus tomorrow. So
and the Bruins home to Dallas.
Right. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you've got four teams fighting for that last playoff spot. I realize it sounds a little bit ridiculous that Carolina's in it, but they are, guys.
Well, Carolina's 7-0-4 in their last 11, but can they still keep going? Because, I mean, they need a serious heater now. Now they're at 75 games played. They can afford, maybe one loss?
It's about maybe. All these teams that I think are below the playoff line can afford one or two losses in their last seven games, and that's about it. I think you're going to need... I mean, you're going to need 92 points, is my guess, to make the playoffs in the East to make.
Yeah,
the
you might need 94.
Yeah, 92, 94 points. So you're talking about you needing, you know, four or five wins in your last six or seven games to really get up there.
See, Tampa Bay, I mean, they're only they're 3 points out plus that game in hand. I mean, that's the one team. I'm not sure if they have the horsepower to do it right now, but. You know, if Steven Stamkos is now day-to-day, is that much of a factor considering he hasn't played in a while? No, not really. But, I mean, just psychologically for a team, if all of a sudden he comes back for the weekend and they can close out their campaign, you know, with five wins.
Sure. Well, if you're the Lightning and all of a sudden on, you know, April 5th you got two games to go and you're still, you know, battling the Bruins for that last playoff spot or battling the Leafs, and all of a sudden you can just throw Steven Stamkos back into your lineup. You can't expect him to be dominant, but it's certainly a hell of a trade deadline acquisition right before the playoffs to get Steven Stamkos back in your lineup.
Yeah, as for the Leafs, I mean, they certainly dodged that bullet unless Freddie's health fails. I mean, it looks like he's going to be good to go for tomorrow's game at Nashville. This is not an indictment on Curtis McElhinney, but I don't know if you want to have him grabbing it for the rest of the season. So as long as Freddie's healthy, I think the Leafs will probably secure that spot, whether it's third in the Atlantic or eighth overall. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, the Leafs don't want to make it go down to game 80, 81, 82. Yeah. I believe they end their schedule against the playoff teams only, and good playoff teams at that.
Yeah.
So it could be, all of a sudden if you're down to game 82 and it's a do-or-die situation.
And this is all part of, I think, like a 12-23 or something like that for them. It's a pretty tough grind to close out the campaign. So we talk about how the Jets had, 32-60 at the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
I'd much rather have that at the beginning of the year than some of the grinds that some of these teams are going through right now to close out the season.
Yeah, well, it's a good point to bring up because it's already, you've played 82 games at this point, or you're almost going to have played 82 games of hockey. You're pretty spent.
Yeah.
And usually the schedule opens up a little bit this time of year. Not this season with the screwed up schedule and the break week and everything else. Like you said, the Leafs are going to be going into the playoffs as a fairly tired team to begin with. Shifting our focus quickly there, Ez, to the Western Conference. Well, the Chicago Blackhawks, they've won the Central Division. Not yet mathematically, I suppose, but they've won the Central Division. They're 7 points up on the Minnesota Wild. They certainly look like the best team in the West. Blackhawks conference to lose? Can anybody knock off the Blackhawks in a seven-game series?
Well, I would say that they're the best team heading into the playoffs from the West, but it's not easy to go all the way. So, yes, I would say that they're the favorite, but Anaheim's playing very well. I wouldn't underestimate any team, really, in the Western Conference. But certainly the way they've played here, Drew, in the second half of the season has been really incredible. Their home record is unbelievable. They've only lost 9 games at home. But Anaheim's also got a crazy home record. So right now, I think everybody would agree that Chicago, Anaheim, and San Jose are the favorites. But again, it's a long grind to get all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals.
There's one team in the NHL that has one win in the last 10 games. That's the Minnesota Wild. When do you push the panic button in Minnesota?
Well, that's the thing. I'm wondering if they're maybe purging all their crap hockey right now before the actual postseason dance gets going. But that's, I don't know. Bruce Boudreau called out his team, right? Didn't he say a couple of days ago that if this was going on at the midway point of the season, we'd have some changes being made?
Yeah.
And
1-7-2 in their last 10.
Yeah.
You got to remember, they were battling with the Blackhawks. It was anybody's division at that point in time.
Since the trade deadline, really, they haven't looked good.
Yeah, they haven't looked good at all since the trade deadline. When do you push the panic button if you're the Wild?
Well, you're going into the playoffs. You're not playing very well, so you're obviously concerned about that. But once the playoffs start, what happens at the end of the regular season doesn't translate quite often. So, you're not happy with the way you're playing. I don't know if you're necessarily hitting the panic button, though.
That's it for this Wednesday evening in NHL this week. Looks like the Flames and the Kings game will be a doozy. The players had a meeting of their minds at center ice during the warm-up skate. So there might be something to keep an eye on as that game gets underway. Big thank you to our guest, David Alter of The Athletic, Dean Millard of TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes. You can also find it on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For Joel Marcoux and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thank you for listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.